Everybody, welcome to Weekly Dish on My Talk 107.1. I'm Steph March. I'm here with Molly Herman today.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
It's nice to be back.
Okay, it's so good. It's good to be back for me, too. I mean, like, it's been, well, I was only off for 1 week, but...
It felt like longer.
I know Hanson and I are ping-ponging back and forth.
Sure. You know? Passing in the night.
She had Zoe here. Our Zoe was here.
I listened.
In the chair.
I loved listening to Zoe.
It was great, right?
Yeah.
Good times. And then Hanson and I are both gone next weekend, you guys. We are going to play a replay of the Zoe show next weekend because we are both out of town. And then we're back for a nice long stretch. The Steph and Steph show is back. So should be fun. Rolling you into spring. I'm sure we're going to talk about gardening. I'm sure we're going to talk about all the things.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But today we have a pretty good show. We are excited. We're being joined by a guest to talk about diversity in veganism. We're going to talk about seasonal eating, what's around, like the pop-ups that are happening and all the fun things. Some spring cooking. We are going to do a couple recipes. Talk about that.
We do cook occasionally.
We cook occasionally. And we're going to talk about Mexico because I was just there. But first, let's talk about what we ate around town this week.
Yeah, I was actually cooking a lot more than I was eating out the last week or so.
Yeah.
But I did. I made it out to Ola Arepa with some friends. Mm-hmm. And they have a new spring allergies. Here we go.
I know.
Round
I know.
Two
We're
this
all
year,
into it.
Our false springs.
Yeah.
They have a new happy hour that they launched a couple of months ago, but under the helm of new chef executive. I guess culinary director is what
culinary
she's called.
Culinary director, Janine Holig.
Janine Holig. And their new happy hour menu is real, real good. And if you are gluten-free, I mean, you can eat at Ola Arepa really easily gluten-free anyway. But they have a lot of fun stuff that is on their happy hour menu that wasn't there before.
Oh, that's so awesome. I think, you know, I love a refresh for them too, especially because I think they're one of those solid places that you love and you know you love going there and you know love eating there, but then you kind of feel like it just falls off your radar. You kind of just need something to spur you back in.
Yeah, and they have that, you know, the Brazilian, this is, you're seeing it everywhere, the pau. You know, the it's like a tapioca starch and cheese little bread. And they're usually made really small, but they make it into a bun for the burger.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's good.
Wait, is there cheese in that bun then?
There's cheese in the bun and there's cheese on the burger.
Oh, jeez, I have to go.
And a sauce and it's a whole thing.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah.
All right, so you and I went to Diane's place. Now, I know last weekend, I think Zoe brought in pastries, Diane's pastries,
yes,
to the show. So I know that some of you guys may have heard that, but we went and actually sat and had breakfast at Diane's this week.
Can I just tell you that was the best start to my morning? I mean,
we don't go out for breakfast ever.
No, and I just loved it.
It was
a beautiful way to start the day, and I mean, I had to take off a little bit and couldn't linger, but... And it was a great space to do it in.
It really was.
It's really beautiful.
Well, and also I think there's something about that. It was a midweek, so it was basically brunch, but it was like, you know, we got there at 8:30 on a Wednesday.
Diane said something about, are you ladies brunching today? I'm like, can we call it brunch if it's 8:30 in the morning?
Yeah, I
think we just call it breakfast.
I felt like it was brunch, but it was breakfast. But yeah, it was 8:30. We made a reservation just because we wanted to be sure. We didn't need to. There were plenty of tables open.
Yeah, but it was buzzy. There were people in and out and coming in. And
yeah. Yep. And I think it's really smart. So it's Diane's Place is in the food building in Northeast. It used to be Kieran's Kitchen. And it is, I don't know, it just is, it's, she completely redid it. And it's so much brighter and lighter. And it's just, it's, the whole vibe is lifted.
Yeah, it feels very refreshing in there and calming.
Yes.
Like it's a nice space to be
in. Yeah. And I think it's just great because you can sit down and just have coffee and pastries. Mm-hmm. And I think that those were the pastries that, you know, were brought here, but you can also then have like a full breakfast. And I am so appreciative of it's not just like waffles and pancakes and an egg sandwich, which we love an egg sandwich, But it was, I mean, we could order the whole menu. In fact, we did.
Chicken noodle soup.
Yeah.
With chili crisp.
Yeah.
And a soft-boiled egg. And I loved the Hmong sausage with sticky rice. And it was like a fermented hot sauce.
That, yeah.
Oh, and an egg on top. It was so good.
And then the free, we had like the, yeah, we had like sweet pork over rice, you mm-hmm. know, bowls.
Mustard greens.
And then we had, I did have the croissant that had the egg, spam, and
nori,
which was fantastic.
I saw that on the menu. I'm like, well, that's what Smarch
is getting. That's what Smarch is getting. Anything with spam, you pretty much can count on.
I wish I had gotten a photo of you taking the first bite because it was the egg drip out of it was like
epic.
Yes.
It epic was egg drip. Right?
It was beautiful.
And then you have, you know, the thing that wowed me the most, honestly, was that garlic scallion. It was exactly what I knew that I had been craving from when I did the sneak peek. But I was like, the scallion Danish, the green scallion Danish with garlic butter was like everything I want in a morning in a pastry. I don't love, you know what I mean? Like the sweet stuff is
sweet. Yeah.
No. And so having that to me was just like that perfect moment of what I was looking for in the morning. If I would have had like an egg on the side of that, if I would have had an over easy egg, or even if I could have dipped that in a soft boiled egg,
get out
of town. So good.
They even had, what was it, an apple parsnip, like a little mini loaf that was gluten free.
Yeah.
That Smyre and I tasted. And it was very good. I mean, just, you know, all of her pastries are delicious.
It's so good. So,
but there's something to eat for everybody. And I didn't tell you guys this, but after I left, as soon as I landed at the office, I made Mother's Day reservations there.
Oh,
at 2 p.m. My boys don't even know this if they're listening. Guess what we're doing?
Guess what we're doing tomorrow or on Mother's Day? When is Mother's Day? My God, it's like May
12th.
Okay.
May 12th. We'll talk a little bit about that later because we got some stuff, fun stuff at Malcolm Yarns.
That's a good idea. Mother's Day reservations at Diane's place.
They did have a few left early morning and then that sort of 2 to 15 sort of realm.
Right.
So
because, and let's be clear, let's just to level set, Diane's place is open only breakfast, lunch and breakfast. Breakfast and lunch. Or, you know, brunchy.
Is she gonna be adding dinner?
She is.
She's just rolling slow with that.
Yeah. When I talked to her, it was about they wanted to get this part, you know, solid. And because this is like, you know, the pastry parts are kind of the parts that she's gonna be handing off, you know, more.
Can I just tell you too, like the service was dinner level service at breakfast because that's where that's the world she comes from. And you can tell the thought and care that has been put into it. And our server was Tim O'Leary, who I hadn't seen in a while. It was nice to have, you know, familiar faces.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah. It was fantastic. And I think, they're just basically, she wants to kind of get the kitchen set into this kind of role, and then they'll start adding dinner. And plus dinner is like, you know, I think she said something interesting to me about like how dinner, you get people who sit longer. And so, and it's usually more food, but it's like longer times. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's more stressful in the kitchen. So it's like, if you start with something that is usually a quicker turn, it's like just getting them into those rhythms. I never thought about it like
when
that.
When you execute more food.
Yeah. Yeah, you just, it's just sort of like you roll it better and you just learn that, you learn about your kitchen and how it works better when you start with breakfast and lunch.
Yeah.
So smart. I love that. So that was Diane's place. That's up in Northeast. You can, delicious. I think they're open 7 days a week. So you could be there right now if you wanted to.
Yeah. And you guys, I mean, everybody can eat there.
Yeah.
Gluten-free, vegetarian, like it covers all the bases.
And it's there's counter seat. You can sit at the counter, mm-hmm. like at the little bar, or you can sit at tables. And again, you can reserve ahead, or there's plenty of room for walk-ins. And you can also grab and go. They have a little thing at the front where you can just kind of grab it and head out if you want to. All right. Well, you guys, we have a great show today. Like I said, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it's like to eat in the mountains of Mexico. And something about interesting about pre-Hispanic eating. It's very interesting. I love it. We'll be right back. This is The Weekly Dish, My Talk 107.1.
How does a Minnesotan boatin', floatin', never gloatin', start a journey seeking a better well-being to improve his health and brain with $10 to his name?
At the YMCA.
Enrollment's 10 bucks, no dues till May. He's gotta spend that Hamilton. Gotta spend that Hamilton. No dues till May. No dues till May. Today, spend that Hamilton. Join the Y at YMCANorth.org.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Weekly Dish on this fine Saturday in April.
Sunny. 78 today.
I know. The weather report is, oh, wow.
We're in disbelief. That's why it took us to the second segment to get to the weather.
I know. It's sort of, it is a summery weekend. Mm-hmm. What does this make you feel like you need to get out and do stuff?
Yes and no, but I'm sort of just waiting for, like, I still can't plant anything.
This is what I'm saying. Like, I feel like this is a tease when you feel like, okay, I should be out there doing, like, yard work. You can't.
I know our friends Kelly and John are starting the garden, the marsh farm today. But I talked to some folks at Bachman's last week, and I'm like, okay, so with this weird weather, can we plant before Mother's Day? Because that's usually the...
Yeah, the start.
And they're like, no. Unless it's like... Hardy, cold,
you have
hardy,
no idea.
Do not do it.
Yeah, and you have
like,
no
okay.
idea what's coming. You know, it could be. Plus, we still need some serious rain. We do need rain.
Yes.
So, anyway, that's the plant report, I guess.
Yeah.
which goes hand in hand with the weather. But we will talk about some spring cooking, things that make you want to, you know, do spring stuff. I wanted to talk a little bit about Mexico and where I was.
I think I should.
And this is a really great, this is like a food travel thing that sort of, I think, is so interesting. Because when I talk about Mexico, when I think about people going to Mexico, mostly, and for me, it's been beaches, right? Mm. Like you go to Cancun, or you go to Mazatlan, you go to, where are some of the other places? You know, the Playa del Carmen.
Right.
And you're doing all the beach activities and that's totally fun and lovely and very valid because the beaches are amazing. But being in the mountains was a really cool experience. And so what we did was we went down to a little town called Tepoztlan, and it is an hour and a half south of Mexico City. Now, I have not done Mexico City, and I really want to do Mexico City.
Our friend Manny Gonzalez is from Mexico City.
Yeah.
A little town called Mexico City.
Yeah, a little town.
But when you flew in, did you get to see any of it except from the air?
We drove out of it, you know, which means that you're sort of like driving through this. You can't just like... exit and be in the mountains. But
and what was that feel like? Did it feel
crowded.
As
crowded and busy, and the traffic was crazy, and you know, people were selling pillows and everything on the side of the road. I mean, there was like, you know, like you get the people walking around with like the fruits and veggies and the cups and stuff like that, and then and then it was like you'd go up to the next stoplight and they'd be selling like posters and things, and the next time I was like, they're selling pillows, like it's very strange.
Is there something I need to know?
Yeah, I don't know. I just was like, it just felt really weird to be like, oh yeah, I need a pillow, pull over, you know? That's great. So anyway, we drove an hour and a half south to this little town called Tepoztlan, and it is near Cuernavaca, if that sounds, that's a familiar town to some people, in the mountains. And it was just, it actually reminded me a lot of Peru, which I have, you know, was in the late 90s, I was in Peru. And it was just, it was really wonderful to be in this little town that is a very magical, mystical town. And it's got a lot of like history in terms of, you know, the Aztecs. There's still an Aztec temple way on top of the mountains that you can climb to. There's a lot of tradition. It's really cool because there's also, obviously, the conquistadors came through in the 1500s. And so there's churches everywhere. Mm. And... it's in the Morelos state, and there's this there's this sort of totem. There's like a guy you see everywhere. This dude with like a really pointy long beard, and it's like a mask. But then they have it on mugs, and they have people dressed up as this guy. It clearly looks like a Spanish conquistador, right? But there's something a little off about it.
Yeah.
And it turns out the legend is about how the indigenous peoples used to, because they were banned from practicing their own religion and their own, you know, ways of life, that they would dress up like a conquistador. So they would wear these masks of this dude with this pointy beard and then practice their religion, but nobody would know it because they'd be like, oh, it's just one of those conquistadors. Yeah. So there's a lot of those kind of really mystical, interesting things. But for me, and of course, by the way, aliens.
Yeah.
It is the most UFO sightings reported in Tepoztlan than anywhere else in Mexico.
You had mentioned that in your pickle, and I was like, we didn't get to dive into that. But let me ask real quick, like, what elevation were you at? Do you know?
We were 2,000 feet above Denver. So we were like...
You were up there.
We were up there. It was significant. I could feel it. Like, it was hard to breathe sometimes.
And so for, like, the food that you were eating, was what they grow there a lot different than...
No, but I wouldn't say so. Right. I wouldn't say so. Because of the fact that it is, what they have is you have the mountains and then you have a valley, and there's a lot of sugar cane and a lot of growth in the valley that gets
still tropical.
Yeah, it gets a lot of crops. Yeah, it's very arid up top, you know, and I mean coniferous, you know. That's the funny part. There's just like cypress trees and all this beautiful stuff. Like, you think of Mexico as palm trees and beaches, you know what I mean? And this is like really rich, old, big cypress trees. And then really cool, you know, kind of in the valley, there's lots of like, it's just lush. It's crazy lush. And so it was, so going to the market, and this was the cool part, going to the market, which is in the center of town, and it's every single day. Wednesdays and Sundays were the big, huge days. And it just was like, nobody spoke English, really. Like, every once in a while, you'd find someone who, but there's nothing written in English anywhere. And it was just kind of, but nobody was, everybody was so friendly. And it was just like, they didn't, they could tell you're a gringo, and they would try their hardest, but then they'd just be like, yeah, I don't know.
So did you have anybody with you that spoke Spanish?
We did. We have, we had a friend, Molly O'Brien, who is, she had lived in Mexico for 9 years. In her 20s. So she was completely fluent. So she totally was our, I was calling her my attache and my cultural attache. And she would like go with us from cell to cell and be like, you know, saying, how much of this or whatever that. We ended up, but what was most interesting to me was we ended up at this, but you could still read, like if you knew, like I know Mexican food.
Sure.
And so I knew what a huarache was. I knew what, you know, you if you know what some of the things are. And I had read ahead. And so I was most interested in the pre-Hispanic food. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about what that is literally like food of the indigenous peoples. And it's, you know, it's, Aztec and it's, it was very cool because it was really vegetarian, which is interesting about how, our next guest, I'm hoping to chat a little bit with him about this, but you know, there was these, I'm going to say them wrong, so I'm not going to say the name, but there were these, lovely little vegetable like patties, and they were all of these great vegetables, like kind of formed together. And then they did like this quick sear, almost like a pan fry on them, and you'd get them, and there was hibiscus and there was nopales and there was, you know, there was bougainvillea from the trees.
I did not know you could eat that until you talked about it.
I did not know, and I've been eating it now like, you know, squash blossoms. Sure. Same thing, if you think about it.
Makes sense.
And it was
beautiful color.
Yeah. And then they would just have those dishes, and they most importantly was the thing that I loved was they had this thing called the itacate, which was like a triangle-shaped masa that was then fried, sometimes stuffed with cheese, almost like a pupusa, if you know what that is. It's like a masa cake, but then it was, sometimes it had cheese, sometimes they'd split it and they'd fill it with things, kind of like an arepa. And then, but it was triangle, and it was often purple, made with purple corn. And it was just, and for the ones that we got, we had it loaded with nopales, which are the cactus, and then an egg, and then it had, and then it had squash blossoms on it and Oaxacan cheese. Oh my God. It was
so delicious.
It was so great.
It actually sounds like very happy food, like with the colors and very vibrant.
So bright. So vibrant. So much huitlacoche.
So, and huitlacoche is the corn fungus that it has its own unique flavor and
mushroomy
applications. Yeah. Kind of the truffle of Mexico.
Too true. Too true.
So, what kind of salsas and sauces were they using?
We had, we had a really spicy, beautiful green salsa. You know, by the way, they pointed out three different tomatillos while we were there. The green tomatillo that you're used to, there's a yellow tomatilla, which is a little bit of a sweeter sense to it. And there's also a purple tomatilla.
Wasn't that pretty?
Oh my God, they were so beautiful. It was just, it was fantastic. And so they had a couple different tomatilla salsas. We had some really spicy, crazy ancho, you know, chili salsas, and all sorts of crazy stuff. It was really good. And there was a lot of fresh stuff too, you know? So one of the things that I know we're going to run out of time, but I wanted to talk about eating in the market, because a lot of people think you can't eat food that's, you know, like that, like straight from a market vendor. They were like, only restaurants or only things. Thing is, just don't eat any raw vegetables. That's how we kept safe on that. We just, nothing that was raw vegetables. Anything that had come from inside of a skin, we could eat, but nothing that was raw, because then it was potentially washed in some of the other water. So that is my little quick report on Tepoztlan, you guys. I'm going to do more, write up a little bit bigger of a thing in pickle if you want to know, and I'll link to it on the page. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Weekly Dish, everybody. I'm Steph March. I'm here with Molly Herman today, and we are so excited to be joined by a guest on the studio line. We have Isaias Hernandez. Are you there, Isaias?
Yes, I'm here. Hi there.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really great. It's been a beautiful morning so far.
It has been. I'm so glad that you're on the show. You are. Your Instagram handle is Queer Brown Vegan, and you have been. Are you in town now still, or were you? Are you already gone?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here in St. Louis.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, and you have recently been in town. Grant Whitaker is a mutual friend we have in common, he's often, you know, a co-host on the show after ours, Shop Girls. But he put me in touch with you because he thought we would connect over what you have going on. And I'm so excited. I've been like digging through your website and digging through all your stuff and thinking about how wonderful it is that you are part of the fashion community, but yet you are also an educator and an activist, and really kind of like spearheading a movement of veganism in that same sector. Tell me a little bit about what drew you to this mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So for starters, I'm very fascinated by living systems. I grew up as a young kid going to a lot of parks and, you know, taking the outdoors very seriously as a kid. And my parents made sure that, you know, ecological education was part of my growing up. And I think for me, what really got me into environmentalism is that in college, I was in this class learning about our industrialized food system. When I encountered this conversation around, you know, where does our food come from, really? And I learned about how, you know, through our fruits and vegetables to our own meat, the ways of how it's being sourced is very unsustainable and how much it's really hurt local small farms worldwide. And so I kind of saw veganism as a way of like, you know, I need to do something here. And so after I learned about, you know, the conditions in which, you know, animals and humans are put in this industrialized food system, I said, I want to help as much as possible right now. So let me divest to stop eating meat and start supporting local, my local farmers in my area through farmers markets. And it was a very intriguing way because I was only 21 years old at the time when I got introduced to veganism. And, you know, all my friends laughed at me when I said, I'm going vegan. And they said, how is that even possible? And now it's been almost 6 years since then.
Wow.
Amazing. Have you seen any health changes for you since you went vegan? Like, what has that meant for you personally?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the most great thing about the diet itself and lifestyles is that the fiber, you intake a lot of fiber, which is really great for people who struggle with any bowel movements. But the first thing I actually noticed when I first went vegan is my energy levels had shifted. For some reason, every time I had consumed any dairy, meat, or eggs, my body felt very sluggish. I actually found out that I was lactose intolerant when I was only 18 and 19. Like the doctors had all told me, they're like, Isaias, like, you've been lactose intolerant for, like, forever.
And for your whole life.
Yeah, and it was really bad because even as a kid, I would tell my parents, like, my stomach hurts so bad. And they would be like, oh, it's just the dairy milk. You need to metabolize it well. And I realized it's just my body just could not accept it. So I felt like a lot of the health issues I had that were, like, really, like, allergic and I felt sluggish instantly went away.
Wow, that's amazing. So I was reading on your website and you're talking about why is there a lack of diversity in veganism? And I was thinking about that because it is true. This is a movement that I think sometimes it can feel, you know, extremely white, you know, and very like sort of. Yeah. And tell me a little bit about how that interplays into how you kind of educate people.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that for starters, plant-based diets are not new. I think they've been very shared amongst all cultures throughout the world. And indigenous communities do a very good job of like illustrating this lifestyle of majority of their diets were plants. So mm-hmm. here in America, a lot of their primary diet was squash, I think potatoes, berries, fruits, other plants. Of course, they consume some meat there, but I think that like a really good example of this is Rastafarianism that is in Jamaica that kind of practices concepts around plant ecology and plant-based diets. And even myself in Mexico, I always tell people where I'm from is that we used to be a fungivore population, which is meaning that like your primary diet was huge amounts of fungi, which a lot of people don't know today because I think that a lot of those histories have been lost. And so when I think we see veganism right now, a lot of sometimes just think, oh, it's only, you know, a white person who's a hippie. But I say, you know, it's all different, you know, shades and tones and different types of people from different areas. And I think that, you know, when I think the veganism needs to be updated from the 2000s to really illustrate the diversity it is today.
Well, and I saw on your Instagram that you did work with a fungi-based yogurt company.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen that anywhere yet. Is it mainstream or is it sort of isolated where you can find it? Out of curiosity.
Yeah. No, of course. Yeah. The product's called Nature's Find and it's made out of phi protein. So their story is really cool. They extracted a mycelium up in Yosemite, I believe, National Park. And they were able to find this specific mycelium and this, like, you know, growing in one of the waters there. Anyway, so they use a lot of fermentation technology to get that, but that is available in Sprouts and Whole Foods, and they have like three amazing flavors, which is vanilla, strawberry, and peach. And to be honest, peach is my favorite. And
okay.
I think that like it's just something that doesn't taste. It tastes like dairy, like it, but it doesn't, and it tastes the exact same.
Yeah, I didn't mean to turn that into a commercial for you. Sorry, but I was just curious. You mentioned the fungi culture, and I had never even heard of a fungi-based yogurt. So, thank you for that.
And yeah, there's like the mushroom coffees, and I guess that's sort of in that same idea. And like, you know, when you really think about like kombucha and everything else, you know, there's a lot of ways. I think there's a lot of ways to sort of explore those that connection to the reactions, the fermentation that nature kind of gives,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sort of transforms mm-hmm. things. And that's again is like thinking about food and plants as a different way than just like, oh, you have to have a salad, you know, because you're not eating meat, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think there's so many ways that we can look through fermentation, preservation, upcycling food waste. There's also good technologies out there.
So Isaias, what is it? What is your main mission as far as like you want? I know climate is like a huge piece of this for you. What would you describe as like, you know, if you look at like the next 5 years, what is your mission over the next 5 years?
Yeah, I think my mission over the next 5 years is that our societies can help reduce overconsumption through food and fashion. The reason why I'm here in Minnesota is that I'm working on, I'm a sustainability advisor at the Citizen Tea Project, where we take pre-loved clothing into new pieces of clothing upcycling. And I really believe that like Generation Z really wants to see new technologies and sustainability really be the facing forward instead of just new products and technologies always.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that like, you know, food and fashion are conglomerate to each other, mainly because, you know, to create fashion, it uses the land, and to create, to grow the fibers, to grow the materials, to grow the labor, you need to be in connection with the land. So I really think that in the next 5 years is that consumers not only just become more connected to becoming ethical consumers to start asking questions, but that they realize the value cost of labor and understanding that how do we create a well-being economic society for everyone?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I have one more question. I'm going back to the fungi. And I'm wondering in the fashion world, I know that in the construction world for sustainability, they are starting to use mushrooms and the mycelium bacteria to help get rid of buildings and rot.
Oh, really?
And then turn the waste into new construction materials, all from the powerful mushroom. Is there anything like that that's happening in the fashion world, like utilizing fibers that way?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think one example of this is like a brand called Stella McCartney. They collaborated with this brand. It was called, I think, Milo Unleather, that was made out of mycelium. And it was very interesting because I think that I actually got to work with them a few years ago and didn't realize that, you know, most vegan leather that exists out there is made out of plastic. But this leather had a very small coating of, I think, plastic, but the majority of it was mycelium base. And like, I was scared. I thought it was snake skin at first. And it was actually it was very smooth and very beautiful.
It was
and
too
I
real.
That's where, yeah, it was too real. Exactly.
Oh my God. That's so cool. There's so many innovations that are coming. You know what I mean? And I think that there's so much great, that's the good side of tech that's happening that can look and maybe provide alternatives to things that are destructive, you know, to, you know, I mean, fast fashion is an interesting, I don't know if you saw, I haven't seen it yet, but I know that Brandy Melville documentary is up.
Yeah.
Have you seen that yet, Isaias, or is it?
Not yet, but my friends keep telling me to watch it, which I think it's super important to bring the larger fashion conversation into our lives.
Yeah, I agree. I'm kind of excited to watch that. Can people still see you? Are you here and like available? People can come and check you out?
Yes, absolutely. I'll be at the Stephanie Art Dillon Studio. I'm here in St. Louis Park, so feel free to stop by. I'm here till Sunday.
Okay, great. All right, thank you, Isaias Hernandez, who is Queer Brown Vegan on Instagram. Give him a follow. We'll post your information. Thanks for coming to Minnesota, and thanks for being on the show, Isaias. Have a great afternoon.
Nice to chat with you. Thank you so much. All right, bye, everyone.
Bye bye. We'll take a quick break.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Take a nap, do some yoga, read more books? A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. And one thing I've learned from therapy is the best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. It allows us to be the best version of ourselves. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get it matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/weeklydish today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weeklydish.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Welcome back to Weekly Dish on My Talk 107.1. I'm Steph March. I'm here with Molly Herman.
Hello.
And we are here to answer your questions. This is the Ask Stephanie portion of the show, 651-641.
We need questions.
107.1. If you have any thoughts, any...
Otherwise, we'll just keep talking feels. About your Mexico trip.
I know. Actually, I was going to come back to that. So if you want to do that, we can do that too. But anything that you guys... Well, we are going to talk about cooking and food in the next hour or so. Some good stuff. But if you have any stuff you want to set us up with, I do want to talk a little bit more about like how to handle a market in a foreign city.
Please.
Because I kind of got the first thing. The first rule, of course, is like, yes, do drink in the Mexico markets. Do drink bottled water. I mean, drink
they
bottled water.
Yeah.
Stay with that. There's a rule about ice cubes, because I know that you kind of think about like, well, which ice, you know, ice is made. So then what are you doing? They told us if there's a hole in the middle of the ice, it's been made with the right kind of water. It's been made from the machines, which have the right filtration systems. But if it's just the blocks, that you may want to rethink that.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. So if you can tell.
So going back to your market experience, if you had not had your cultural attaché, Molly O'Brien, with you. Do you feel like you could have navigated it in that town in particular on your own?
I could have. Well, and amen for Google Translate, by the way.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you can absolutely, Google Translate is a thing that you can just like say into your phone, you know, you want to say, you like, I want to ask, how much is this? And then it spits out, ¿cuándo está? You know,
sure.
Tomatillo. And you can say that and then to them. And so then, and then you have to kind of like put the phone up to them while they're saying it back. And then it translates it for you. That's marvelous. It's a little clunky and a little bit odd. But I also think that there are certain things that the hardest part for me was also like, when Molly was off talking to someone else and I was looking at like a necklace or a bracelet or something, and I would just say, you know, I'd look at them and I'd be like, how much? And they would kind of, they'd say the numbers, and I know uno, dos, tres, but I don't know how to put it together.
Right.
But so then they would all have calculators and they would just type up the number and show it.
So what a great barrier reduction that is.
Yeah.
For sure.
No kidding.
But like, did you feel like you could have gotten by on your own?
Yes and no. Okay. I mean, I wouldn't have done the same things. You know, sure. I think that I wouldn't.
Well, and the bargaining, I think, would be harder.
Well, and so this is the thing is in the market, you can bargain a little bit, but it's not really much. And then, you know, at the stalls and then, but in the stores, you don't for sure.
Okay.
That's what, our, when we did go around, cause the other thing is we went around with a chef. We did go around. We had, Chef Anna, who is, by the way, her husband is, from, they have lived in Minnesota.
Of course.
I think he's from Iowa, but I think they lived in Minnesota. Her son goes to Madison, you know, and it's like, so we were in her little cooking school, which was spectacular. And by the way, this cooking school is what I would love to recommend anyone do. She has a house set up so that you basically live at the house. You know, they have this great little area that has, everyone has their own separate rooms and it's kind of overlooking this veranda, this whole special place. There's a pool, there's, and then this like kitchen in the sky and a roof deck. And it's, you stay there for a week and she teaches you Mexican cuisine.
I'm going to need that number.
You're going to need that number.
Yeah, that sounds like something I want to
do. It is fantastic. And it is like, you have your, you can like, and there's times where like two women were coming back. We were all cooking. Two women were coming back. They had been there for a week. One was from Britain. The other was from Ohio. And they were like, yeah, well, we just went down and had a spa. We just had a spa. They'd gone to one of the spas in town and had like time to go do that. And then they were getting ready to come back and learn more cooking. It is the dream. Like, okay. I would maybe go back just for that.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic. And she's, what I loved about Anna, Chef Anna, is that she, the way that she taught the school, the way that she taught the class was not that, so I had a cooking class in Iceland when I went to Iceland, and it was great. It was fun. A lot of people have taken that same cooking school class. And it was, he handed us recipes and we sort of had to kind of go through our things. And I, you know, but this was like a dance. This was like, she was like, all right, here's how we're going to do tres leches cakes. Let's talk about what it's going to, what you're going to take, what you need to do. And then she moved to us and she's like, adobo, you guys are team chicken. Here's what I need you to do. You know, like, let's start with this and then we'll get on to the next phase.
I love that.
She started everybody in phases and then we'd get into it. And then I'd be like, okay, well, I'm, you know, I mean, the onions and the garlic are kind of sweated perfectly. Where do you want me to go next? You know, and she's like, cut the chilies like this and like take the seeds out. And, but like, she just told us how to do them. And then we just did them and she'd come back and check. And that is so much better of a way to learn for me personally than reading and doing.
Well, it's an experience instead of a study.
Yeah. And it was like, we just sort of, and then I, you know, my friend Christine and I were kind of balancing. So I was like, okay, you know, you do these and I'll go over here. And then we'd switch and then we'd both get it into the Vitamix. And, you know, it was a really, but then sometimes we had nothing to do while it was simmering. And so we'd go over and help with the tamarind margaritas, or we'd go do something
else.
I
bet you did.
Yes, we did. Right?
Taste test.
Right. And then we all learned how to try to make tortillas and get them on the comal, which is the big flat top. And I am real bad at that still.
Are you?
I overthink it and then I flap them down. And it's like, it's not like a quick little process. It's like you press them and you have this little flimsy tortilla and it's very doughy. And then you have to like gracefully like lay it on the cooktop. And mine kept folding, you know, I kept like flicking my wrist or something. So it took a little bit of an effort.
Little wrist flick. You were being a little too flairish.
School of the flair, of the tortilla flair. I kept thinking of Gustavo Romero and how disappointed he would be in me.
Gustavo's probably like, just let me cook the tortillas for you.
I know, from
Nixta,
okay. Our friend, from our chef friend. And I was just thinking about him like, oh my God, he would be like, March, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
But it was fantastic. And I mean, I just think about like waking up in the morning, going to the market with her, and then she walked through and talked us through everything she was buying, talked about where it was grown and how the role of it in the system, and like, and then she would, and then we just walked uphill back to her house. That was the hardest part. I was like, all right, wore the wrong shoes.
Altitude.
Yeah, wrong altitude, wore the wrong shoes, all the things. But it was still fun. I still loved it.
So when you guys press out the tortillas there,
yeah.
I'm trying to help with your tortilla game.
Okay.
When you press, or you're using a press,
yeah, we had
or
a press.
Are you rolling them out? You're doing a press.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything above and below that, so it's not sticking to the press?
Yes.
Like, I mean, I use parchment or plastic.
Yeah.
Okay. So I use parchment, and one of the reasons I use parchment is because when I do gluten-free, like flour tortillas, they're a little more fragile, but then I can just take it and I I put it down on the, like, I flip it.
Oh.
So I'm holding the parchment and peel it away.
Oh. Maybe because we had plastic, we didn't.
But yeah, plastic, you can't do that.
No.
Of the heat. But try it with parchment at home and see if it works for you.
Yeah, she had us, like, take it and slap it. Like, you lift it up on the paper or the plastic, and then you kind of slap it on your hand. And like, there's a specific, like, halfway. So then you, like, lay it down and swoop your hand up at the same time.
Okay.
So it was... And then Salsa Lisa did it the other way. She went like this, fling, and hers were great. I was like, why are we going backhanded? I'm like, we're going backhanded now? Holy moly.
The choreography was up for interpretation.
It was up for interpretation, right. But I told the kids, I told the boys I was going to make mole. I was going to make the adobo sauce again on Sunday. So I'm going to make that at my house.
Yeah, you promised us a mole party. I just wanted to
know, and I didn't make mole. I made adobo. But we can. I'm going to try to do it again this weekend, Sunday night.
Practice on the boys.
And then we'll have a big party about it. Because I wish I would have gotten a mole sauce recipe. But the adobo was pretty amazing.
Maybe we just get together and try it.
And also just like going to like, you know, the market and like buying these chili peppers, which is just like these dried chili peppers, the guajillo and the...
I love a guajillo.
Yeah. That's and it was the... What was the other one?
Ancho and...
Maybe it was ancho. And I just thought it was just like, I don't do that. And that's what I loved about like learning that aspect. And now I can go do that. Mm-hmm. I know how to source that and like figure it out and... I have to probably end up going to El Burrito Mercado maybe to find their stuff.
I think so. If Melissa is listening.
Yeah. Is there a place in Minneapolis that you would recommend at all for that or?
Just to source the peppers?
Yeah.
I mean, I think most mercados that you go to, but El Burrito Mercado would be amazing.
It'd be the best,
I think,
right?
They have the biggest selection.
I think so. All right. Well, 651-641-1071 if you guys want to call in. We're kind of... So maybe everyone's
Nobody
out and about.
Nobody wants to talk to us today.
Yeah, I know. That's fine. I think everyone is like excited about the 70, yeah, the big 70.
I'm happy to talk to you.
Yeah. I mean, we can just keep
chatting. Are you talking any about the mezcal or is that another pickle thing you're going
to do? That's another day, I think. Okay. Yeah. The mezcal is really significantly amazing. And it was, we had some great tastings. I mean, and there was a lot of great, like the cocktails that we had at the little margarita cocktail bar.
Mm-hmm.
Were beyond, I mean, they were just as astounding as anything I've seen, you know, like they were totally mixology based. Not at all. And we had so many, I mean, the juices are just, you know, outstanding and they're doing it like live and on a cart next to us, you know, and then doing the smoking and all the things. So it was really fun. I drank a lot of margaritas, you know, I drank definitely some of that, but I didn't overly drink in it. For me, it was because of the altitude. I just didn't want to like swamp the rest of my day. You know, I was too interested in having a full day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys, there you go. There's a little roundup, double dose. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with the top two and hour two. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is The Weekly Dish on My Talk 107.1.